Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, editorial director, Efficient Plant Magazine, and I'm here once again with Ken Bannister, author of the book, along with Heinz Block, Practical Lubrication for Industrial Facilities, 3rd edition. We've established many times that you need to get that book if you do anything with lubrication. And Ken also is our resident lubrication expert, writing an article every month. And this month's topic is IIoT, Industrial Internet of Things, and lubrication sensors. And we knew eventually we'd be talking about IIoT and lubrication. It was just inevitable. But I think it's interesting, Ken, that when we talk about IIoT and the sensors and collecting data, that doing it with the lubrication system, and what we're really looking at here is the very core of just about any manufacturing operation, and to be able to sense and predict what goes on with your lubricants, what their conditions are, heat, temperature, which I guess are one and the same thing, but filtration, longevity, all the things that go into lubrication. I mean, we've been sensing these things and can track them for a long time, but we're at the very core here, and it seems to me that we really can use the lubrication system as a bellwether for just about everything in the plant. Can I make that kind of a statement?
I think you can, Gary, and thanks for having me on once again. I mean, lubrication, let's face it, it's like a body without the blood, you know. It's the blood of the machine, in essence, and it's the life force of the machine. It's an integral part of the machine design, and most people forget that. They mostly seem to think that it's a recyclable or reusable component, a throwaway component. But it's not. It's actually an integral part that is actually engineered into the machine itself. And sensors have been around for quite a long time on lubrication systems. For instance, if you look at some of the old the straight side presses, especially the larger ones like the 500,000 tonners, we had temperature sensors on all the main bearings many, many years ago, going back into the 60s and the 70s. And those temperature sensors, they triggered off a lubrication pulse, which would lubricate the main bearings that were raising temperatures till the temperature cooled down. So then, you know, we also have, for years now, we've been putting energy sensors in terms of looking at the amperage draw, specifically on automotive plants where you have a lot of power and free conveyors, very large conveyors being pulled, taking an awful lot of energy. And when that motor starts to, the chain gets a little dry, the motor starts to pull more energy draw, which triggers on the automated lubricator, and it then counts off the number of links as it goes around for one full complete cycle, and then shuts off the lubricator. And I guess something simple as a hydraulic filter with a bypass on it. I mean, PAL filters have had a sensor that senses when it goes into bypass for many, many years now, which switches on a light and tells the operator that it's time to change the filter.
Yeah, well, that's the thing when I read your article, and you got me thinking. Really, when it comes to sensing lubricant systems, IIoT is almost like a new wallpaper on what we've been doing all along, and we're just making it look good. The difference is that we're collecting data into a system that is combining it with other data in a plant and providing some kind of analysis, but savvy people would have been doing that kind of thing anyway.
Well, that's right, Gary. And let's not forget, too, we've gone from mechanical switches and house wiring down to microcircuitry now, feeding into computer control systems through SCADA, SCADA systems, and linking it into other data. And so it shows relevance with what else is going on with the machinery at the same time. So that's the big difference, is the algorithms that have been put together to understand that when we've got a lack of pressure and we got high temperature, and We've got the machine is seeing an energy draw that's rising as a result. There's three things at work there, and they may not all necessarily be on the lube system, but if they're all pulled together, we know that we have maybe a lack of lubricant. Or the lubricant has got a line that's broken, and we're getting friction that's occurring that could result in a seize on the equipment itself, right? So those are the kind of things that has changed, and it's the I guess it's the rapid rate of how that data is moved across and analyzed and brought back to the operator to actually click out either a work order to the maintenance department or to raise a red flag to the operator that there is something major. And of course, if we know what all those elements are, it's kind of like the artificial intelligence that's telling the operator that this is what's going on and is most likely. And then it can actually put the machine into idle or shutdown mode till the operator actually repairs or does something or clears that fault.
Yeah, I just when I was reading the article, I could just see old timers just looking at me in the eye and going, "Yeah, how is the so? We've been doing this, this is how we keep track of things." And yeah, you can put your fancy sensors on there in your software, but this is how we've been keeping track of things forever. So it kind of gave me a chuckle.
True.
It just
Yeah. We're just a bit more sophisticated about it now, and it's wrapped up in a different package in
Yes.
sort of microcircuitry, and it can be massaged with other data. That's the major difference. It's not just related directly to the lubrication system. It relates to the throughput. It relates to the efficiency of the equipment at the same time.
Right, yeah, and I'm not in any way short changing
Oh,
IIoT technology, not by any stretch, but yeah, the information's been around for a long time, but yeah, integrating it into the bigger picture is certainly a huge step forward. There's no doubt about that.
Yes.
So, all right, so in the article you looked at seven sensors: temperature, pressure,
Yes.
moisture, particulate, oxidization, I do that every time, lubricant levels, and energy metering. Can we rank those? If I had to make a choice, I mean, I suppose, I guess really the first question I should ask you, if I'd organize my thoughts a little bit, is in a typical system, do we want all seven sensors these days? Are they all equally critical? Is that what we should do, or should we cherry pick here?
Well, the nice thing, Gary, is that there are a lot of sensors these days that are multi-sensors, and they come in a variety of arrangements. But if you think about it logically, if you had to rank one above all, it is actually probably the simplest one of all, which is a lubricant level. If there isn't any lubricant in the system, it's like
There we
if
have
there's no blood in
it
the
right
there you have it right there, right? Everything else will fail. You'll get energy rise. The oil. Well, it's probably already oxidized. So you've got no pressure. You've got no temperature. You've got no flow. And you're actually moving into a position of where you can get into from a hydrodynamic lubrication into a lubrication state that's going to cause the two overlapping surfaces to actually come together and collide, and you're going almost into a seize area at that time. And if you don't score and rip the bearing, you can do a lot of damage to the equipment at that point, which it won't recover from. So keeping the oil in place in situ and having it the right level, and that's let's we also look at high level and low level. You put too much lubricant into the reservoir, you can create what's called churning, which creates oxygen in the form of air entrapment and air train bubbles, which can easily deplete the antioxidant and complete the antioxidant additive package and take that out, and where now you've got air entrained into the system, which is not good in that case. And so those are the kind of, so over lubrication is detrimental. Having too much lubricant in a play is detrimental, and it will raise the temperature of the oil significantly. Of course, when you get low, we get the temperature rise because we don't have enough cooling the bearings at the time, and we don't have enough throughput to actually get a full film lubrication in there. So there is, you know, both aspects are very poor in that respect, and we can lead to metal on metal contact. And so lubricant level is very important. Getting the right level is very important as well. So that's the first element. If we were to rent something second from that, I would likely go to pressure or to flow. So a lack of line pressure is indicative of like a broken line or a leaking reservoir, which will very much take us then into the low level at that point. Once we've started to lose lubricant in there, it could be a slow leak and take quite a while. So pressure is an indication of one, or flow. Some systems require higher pressures, some systems require more flow, but as long as you get it's getting the right amount of oil at the right time in the right place, that's important. So pressure is a good one that we look at. It's also indicative of a blocked or a crimped loop line. For instance, if somebody's hit a loop line on the outside of the machine with, say, and they've been working in the area, they've got a lift truck, they might have accidentally bumped it and crimped that line, or the line might have started to weep because we've used inexpensive line material and we've actually bent it too many times to get it into place, and it's work hardened. Specifically with copper or brass lines, that happens quite a bit if we bend it too much, and they'll start to bleed at the corners, and then you'll start to get a lack of pressure in there as well. And then we also got pressure differential that goes across the filters. So that tells us it's the delta between the in and the outside on the pressure filters that tells us what the pressure drop is across that filter. And of course, as the filter starts to plug up, the pressure will change, and then we'll get an indication of the pressure on that. So that's an important one for either filters and for the line systems themselves. If we were to go down the list from that point on, I would say temperature. Temperature can be created in the reservoir, and it can be created at the bearing points. Like I said, the old traditional systems had them at the bearing points, which would indicate a lack of lubricant reaching the actual bearing point. And if, for instance, if the bearing had turned turned slightly and the entrance for the oil had been blocked, so the bearing was loose, moved around and blocked the entrance, what we'd get a buildup in pressure, because it would be deadheading all the pressure there, and we'd also get a rise in temperature at the bearing point. But more importantly is if it's a recirculative system, is what's the temperature of the oil coming back in? Is it being cooled enough, and is it taking the temperature away from the bearings and cooling the bearings? And that is the old Anna Reynolds rule that comes into play, where every 18 degrees F or 10 degrees C, that the temperature rises, we basically half-life the oil. And inverse, if we lower the temperature by 10 degrees, we can double the life of the oil. So it's, again, that's coming to life cycle of the oil and the parts that it's lubricating at the same time. Next one I would say is moisture. If there's any moisture, now that one's important whenever we have a process that has a lot of water. So for instance, in the vicinities, so for instance, food manufacturing, when we're doing a lot of cleaning and stuff, water can ingress very easily, and water can basically change the viscosity of the lubricant drastically. If you go into a system that's, for instance, like a hydraulic system, water's not good in the oil because it can do all kinds of damage to the parts. It can hammer. It can also raise a different temperature under pressure, and then that water will bleed off and leave air in the system, and then you will get hammer in the system, and that's not good either. So we're looking for moisture. Moisture will drastically reduce the life of the lubricant. All of those, when the lubricant is spent and has utilized all of its, if we've been doing things well, and has utilized all of its additive packages for one thing and another, it will start to oxidize, and then that the oil then starts to change its chemical structure, and it also thickens with viscosity. The viscosity changes. So oxidization of viscosity sensors are You know, sometimes they're different, but they will do the same thing and result in the same diagnosis, which is it's time to change your oil at that point. And of course, the energy metering is a residual one that can tell us when something is not getting oiled, the energy will be rise in terms of the amperage draw, and it can help us trigger lubrication systems on and off. And it can also see if we're actually over lubricating, if there's too much lubricant, especially where grease is concerned. You'll see an energy spike initially, and then you'll see it tailor off. And so energy is one way of showing us the state of how each bearing is in terms of how much lubricant is in it and how well it's actually running. So they're all really, really good monitoring. If you have one, it's better than having none. If you have all of them, that's the best case scenario. And it's usually the full recirculated, the large recirculated systems that have a combination of all of those sensors. But when you look at certain things, I mean, most of those are available in most cars on the road these days, all of those sensors.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they have an algorithm in the computer that tells us when to change the oil based on our driving condition, based on the type of driving that we actually do, our ability to keep our foot at a reasonable rate on the accelerator, on the brakes, and so we're not taking away energy from the vehicle. So it shows in terms of fuel mileage, and it also shows in terms of the longevity of the oil of when to change it. So and the temperature of the vehicle as well. So
right.
Yeah. So it's. We automatically look at all of those and understand what they all are. So all of those sensors are working for us every time we get into a modern car. When we get into machinery, the new machinery is being designed with all of these elements put in place and the computer control systems to actually diagnose them online and tell us, the operator, what the next step is and what needs to be done.
Talk about these multi-sensors. You say we can get them in just about any combination. Are multi-sensors as reliable as, say, in this case, seven individual sensors? Is it? Are there things we need to be aware of when we specify and purchase multi-sensors?
Anything electronic, if we look at reliability center maintenance in terms of how anything electronic fails, it'll fail almost immediately once it's put in place. And it's a random failure item. And the reliability on electronic control systems these days is extremely good in terms of the way they're manufactured. Most of these are manufactured in white room technology, white room spaces like bearings. And so we really do get a very good reliability and a high quality. If you're buying quality controls, there are a lot of shady control manufacturers out there that are emulating the big boys at a third of the cost. So you pay for what you get, as in most things in life. And we all know, a quality control system or quality control manufacturer, someone like an Allen Bradley or an Omron or someone like that, we all know that we're getting quality, and we expect that reliability and quality to pan out on everything we buy from them. And I think that's a reasonable expectation these days. And I don't think they let us down at all. In most cases, the reliability is really very, very high. So when you're looking at different sensors for different elements, it all depends on the configuration of the lubrication system, how much you have contained within the reservoir, and how expansive it is, and how many lubrication points you have, and the type of delivery system it is. All of those will predicate what type of controller and what type of monitoring system you will put in place, and that's where you work with the sensor control people to actually determine what's the best one and the space that you have to put it in and work with, and that, all of those are down to the actual design as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I bring that the quality of sensors bring that up because when you're monitoring and well, monitoring your lubrication system. It's just not the kind of sensor you want to buy out of somebody's trunk in the parking lot. It's
absolutely not.
Yeah, and you want somebody to consult with you to make sure that you're placing them in the right spots and that they're doing the right thing and calibrated correctly and all of those little details, which you should do with any of them, but you know how people are. Well, I know somebody who can get it to me for half off. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is, of course, is that what are you going to do with the signal? And how are you going to
there's that, isn't there?
transpose that signal into something that you can that becomes informational that you can make a management decision with, right? So it all depends on what control system is it going into in terms of that will read the sensors. So that will determine whose type of sensor you'll go with and what protocol you'll go with, unless it's just a straightforward one that's relevant only to the machine itself. So it's autonomous on the machine that will deliver out through its computer control or a computer program. It's already built in the software that sits in that one piece, and then it can be exported if you want from that point on. So again, it all depends on the design, I guess, and how the designers thought of it and how they've looked at it. So as an add-on, it will be based on what is your control strategy within the organization. And what is it you want to do and what are you trying to cure as a result of putting the sensors in? So that's the kind of thing that we look for, because we don't have to go with everything if we have high quality and highly trained people that understand what is occurring, what is going on with the equipment. And it's when you get into the new age where we're getting a lot less skilled people, where we're going to have to compensate for that lack of skill within them by making the machine more smarter and giving sort of a red and green inference as to whether it's a go or a no-go situation that can then be looked at by a technician as to what the problem is and resolve the problem. Because the days of the that sort of the operator maintainer are waning. As the skill base gets older and it's not being replaced through the educational system. So
yeah, well, and you just outlined a topic for an entire different discussion, and that is that very thing: less skilled people, any really intuitive, simple interface has an incredible amount of effort behind it to make it simple. But then also the question of at what point are we collecting more data than we can practically use? How do we know what the right data is? I mean, there's all of those questions, because
that's right.
In a lot of systems, we can already collect and all have been able to collect huge amounts of data. But for most people, it's just useless numbers. And
well, that's what we call meaningless unrelated data, or MUD, isn't it?
Right, exactly.
And that's where you would buy, the analogy for that is someone who will go out and buy a Ferrari and can't drive a car.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got the highest performance car, one of the highest performance cars on the planet, but I can't drive. So
right.
All I can do is look at it. So everything has to be in context.
Yes.
That's where we're going with this in terms of all of those key sensors. They don't all have to be on there. It's all relevant to what we're actually lubricating and the consequence of something failing on that piece of equipment.
Yeah. Well, we'll have that discussion someday. That would be fun. Sure. All right, Ken, I sure appreciate the time once again. Thanks for the article, and I'm sure we'll be back chatting next month. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Look forward to it. Take care.